Mr. President of the Republic of Slovenia, Dr. Natasha Pirc Musar, and the President of the Portuguese Republic, Mr. Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa.
Excellencies, President of Slovenia, Dr. Natasha Pirc Musar, Excellence Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa, President of Portuguese Republic, a very, very warm welcome to Euro-Mediterranean University, EMUNI. We are proud to have you here to be your host, and I would like you to have a pleasant and productive day today. Thank you for engagement with our students. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to share with you our ideas, our initiatives related to Mediterranean. And thank you for your commitment to Mediterranean ideas. EMUNI is an international university. It's international network, and EMUNI mission is to bridge the coasts of Mediterranean by higher education, research, innovation, contributing to cultural dialogue, contributing to culture of peace, contributing to prosperity of this region. However, there are challenges that we face. And the first challenge that I want to mention is poor mobility of students from south to north and from north to south of Mediterranean, being supported by European Union financial mechanisms like Erasmus. I'm surprised that less than 1% of students from south moving to North Mediterranean is financially supported by Erasmus Plus mobility scheme. So we have to change this. We have to strengthen financial mechanisms of EU for students exchange, for professors exchange, and for joint research and innovations. And the second challenge is related to diversity of higher education systems, policies, and concepts. We need to improve harmonization as a condition for integration of universities. And we would like to make you being interested in the vision of Euro-Mediterranean higher education area. That means broadening Bologna concept to North African and Middle East countries. This is a long-term vision and very important for cooperation in this region. Presidents, excellencies, your leadership is our inspiration. We are convinced that you will listen to our initiatives and support them, and thank you for that. Dear students, you are the future of Mediterranean. Your curiosity, including today, your energy, your passion will make you future leaders of this part of the world. So it depends on you, the more dispensable, more sustainable and more happy Mediterranean. Thank you for this in advance. And thank you for your attention. I'm now giving the floor to our students and Emma Jbara, student from Tunisia, which graduated at EMUNI University, will continue this discussion.
Zvoli. Your Excellencies, dear guests, fellow students, good morning and welcome to Emoni University. It is with a great honor to stand before you today on this great occasion as we have the honor to host two distinguished leaders, Mr. President of the Republic of Slovenia, Dr. Natasha Pirc-Musar, and Mr. President of the Portuguese Republic, Mr. Marcelo Rebelo de Sousa. Today's discussion on facing the challenges and shaping the future of the Mediterranean highlights the need for collaboration and innovation. As an Emoni student, I've grown through cultural exchanges, collaborative projects, and working along with peers from the Mediterranean, as we are all united in our vision. And right now, I would like to invite Mr. President of the Republic of Slovenia to give us her insight.
I can do it from here.
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. So, good morning, everybody. It's really an honor to be here today. Especially, I'm honored because I have a great company aside, and that's the Honorable President of Portuguese Republic. We know each other for a couple of years now. Since I'm the rookie in the politics, of course, I've been in politics for 2 years. Marcelo, I am not going to mention how many years. But to start with, I will just tell you a little story I explained yesterday to the people at the gala dinner in Presidential Palace. When we met for the first time, it was on a sad occasion. It was the funeral of the Pope Benedict XVI in Vatican, but Marcelo was the first president that I shook hands with. So he will always stayed in my memory as the first one. You never forget the first one, yeah? That's the fact. And then the second time we've met, it was in Porto, in Portugal, at the Aerolos meeting with the presidents of European Union with non-executive powers. And it was a great debate, and I saw there how Marcelo is respected in this community. And at the end, when we departed, and I will never forget this as well, Marcelo, he said to me, "Goodbye, my teenage president." And I felt really honored, you know, because he could be a father, my father, because the age gap is so huge. But okay, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to discuss the important things, the things that matter, not only for young people, but for the whole planet, because the connectivity to the Mediterranean region is definitely the climate change. And I think that we are going to tackle this very important subject. And, you know, just to let you know, I'm pretty sure you know the numbers. When we discuss the plastic pollution, oceans are really, really heavily affected. And this is why I want to discuss this. We are just 5 meters away from the sea. Do you know how much plastic we do produce only in Mediterranean area per day? The waste plastic, not the produce, the production. How much plastic do we throw away? And most of it ends in the sea and in the waters. 730 tons per day, ladies and gentlemen, only in Mediterranean area. What are we doing to ourselves, to our planet? Sometimes, you know, I have a feeling that we do not care enough. And I often hear the answer, politicians are not doing enough. I can say, I agree. But, yes, we could have done more in politics, but every single individual could have done more as well. Because every little stone we put into this mosaic of taking care of our planet is of significant importance. And it broke my heart when I saw what happened in United States of America immediately after the elections. United States of America stepped out of the Paris Climate Agreement, the biggest polluter in the world. And they did that. What can Slovenia and Portugal do? Again, not much, but my starting point always is, and will always be, don't be quiet. Be vocal about the things that matter. If you are quiet, nothing will change. That's the fact. if you do discuss things that matter, you at least give that topic a chance to be changed. And that's what's driving me, you know, at the back of my presidency taking office. So I'm pretty sure we are going to discuss climate change and any other important topics. So I will stop here with my introduction, with the reason, with the topics that I want to discuss with you. And I would just like to say thank you for giving me, Mr. Bohins, this opportunity to have a discussion with the students from the Mediterranean area. So you are an international group of people, and you probably think sometimes really very differently, but that's the magic of this world. If everybody would think the same and alike, it would be bloody boring. That's the fact. So thank you. So we have to listen to each other. We have to discuss topics that are of important matters. That's what I'm trying to push you to do, and I hope that you're going to do that in the future. So that's my message to you. Never, never be quiet. Be polite, have a cultural dialogue. At the end, with some people, you can say, we agree that we disagree. But next morning, say hello to that person. That's what I'm doing, also in politics. And it's bloody difficult sometimes. But I am doing it. So thank you.
So, thank you, Your Excellency. I would like now to invite Mr. President of the Portuguese Republic to give us his perspective.
Thank you. Well, well, well. Thank you, dear Rector. Quite an invitation. For an old professor, having a dialogue with a teenager president, Natasha, and with you, a little bit of teenagers, it's, for me, it's being at home. I'm retired for 7 years. And I miss university a lot. Well, thank you to the Board of Administration. Well, there is a Portuguese, a brilliant person, former president of the parliament, foreign minister, defense minister, education minister, parliamentary affairs minister, culture minister, everything in Portugal. Well, the ambassadors. Well, the subject is facing the challenges and shaping the future of the Mediterranean. I'm going to list, we have 3 to 5 minutes, what are the challenges in the Mediterranean. And if you want to develop them, of course, we shall do it. First of all, as Natasha said, climate change. First time in Security Council there was a debate on climate change and international peace and security. Portugal had the idea of this debate, 2011. Then, first time, there was a legal report and study about the effects of the sea level. Portuguese idea. Well, anyway, first challenge, climate change. It's quite a challenge in the Mediterranean. Worse than most of the other oceans or seas. Another subject that is for us very, very important. Preserve the oceans and biodiversity. We had the second UN conference several years ago in Lisbon. Second challenge, migration. It's quite a challenge. The relation between Northern Africa, Africa as a whole, and the Near East, Middle East, and Europe. Third, humanitarian situation in so many countries nearby the Mediterranean. Fourth challenge, instability. Instability means instability in Near East, Middle East, but also in Northern Africa, Sahel, and Central Africa. Ah, it's so far away, it's not so far away. Migrating from Central Africa to Northern Africa is a question of months. no longer of decades or of years. Then, of course, we cannot forget problems that mean absence of priority of European countries, of European Union, concerning partnership with those regions concerning economic, social stability, sustainable development, conditions for peace, for appeasement, for non-forced migrations, everything else that is only treated at the end of a long procedure and not in the beginning of it. Finally, the new context of the world, present here also in the Mediterranean. We had international order. Now we have an international disorder. It started a little bit in 2016, but now it's obvious in the second term of this American administration. This means problems in the dialogue between United States, Canada, United States, and Europe. Ignorance in the American public opinion and administration concerning other continents. Let us not speak of Latin America, but let us speak of the Mediterranean, and speak of Africa, and speak of Near East and Middle East. At the same time, of course, a recovery of the presence of Russian Federation in the Mediterranean area and in Africa. I mean, a kind of a change in the balance of power that is going on in an impressionist, pontist, casuistic, chaotic way. Everything is mixed together. This disorder and the non-priority of climate change. This disorder and the non-priority of the oceans. This disorder and the non-priority on migrations. Or a certain kind of priority, a different kind of priority, and the rest of it. Of course, it's up to you to choose which one of these challenges, or all of them, or some of them, you want to develop. Don't forget the long term, that are already short term, like climate change. Then it will be too late. But let us not forget everything else that is connected, interconnected with climate change. 5 minutes. It's over.
Thank you, Your Excellencies. Thank you, Your Excellencies, for your insightful words. I would like now to start with our discussion. As at Emuni, we value open dialogue. And today, our students will have the chance to ask questions and share their thoughts with our presidents. I would like to start with the first question. Yes.
Good morning, Your Excellencies. It's an honor to be here today. My name is Ibrahim Sourani. I am from Syria. My question is, how can Mediterranean countries work together to on climate change and economic influence and immigration? This is my question.
Yeah, climate change and migration is a beautiful combination, I mean, in brackets. Let me start with this. If we in the past were looking at migration mostly because of the conflicts in the areas like Afghanistan, Sahel, you mentioned, but in the near future, and this future is really, really very close, we are going to see climate migration. That's for sure. Africa is going to be affected first. Droughts, And then a lot of rain and droughts and rain and droughts, floods, this is what's going on, yeah? So we are going to be facing with this. But nevertheless, if we tackle the Mediterranean, I will tell you one statistical data. In 2020, 248 million people lived in the Mediterranean area. 70% of the most youngest people live in Middle East and North Africa. 70% of all the population is young population in Middle East and North Africa, so Mediterranean. And when we are discussing young population, what do you care most about? You don't have to answer, because I do know. You want good jobs, you want an apartment, you want to start families. That's perfectly okay. That's beautiful, not just okay. And if you want to achieve this, you need a country which is offering you this. And if this is your not homeland, you go elsewhere. It's hard to leave the homeland. I'm always asking myself, you know, what's in people's mind when they decide to leave the homeland? That's not an easy decision. Either it is because of the war or economical migration. Probably the hard feelings are the same. It's hard. So for the Mediterranean area and all the countries on this planet, it's essential to take care about the young people. I love statistics and numbers, despite the fact that I'm a lawyer. I mean, I don't know why, but I remember crazy numbers most of the time. And I have a habit to go through statistical data of various indexes. And I would encourage you to check two of them. That's the Brain Drain Index and the Gini Index. Brain Drain Index is going to show you how many young people from the age 18 to 35 are leaving the country. If the Brain Drain Index is 10, that means everybody in this age period is leaving the country. And then in between. In Slovenia, the Brain Drain Index is 1.3. So it's really very low. In Hungary, for example, it's 4.7. And more south you go from Slovenia and Croatia to the Balkan countries, the rest of the Mediterranean countries, also Greece has a high brain drain index. So that means that there is something wrong there. We are not, the politicians, the country is not offering prosperity to young people. Gini index. Gini index is showing you how strong the middle class is in a certain country. The strongest middle class, the better social welfare. The bigger gap between rich and poor, that's not good. Houston, we have a problem. Slovenia is number 4 in the world according to the Gini index. We do have a strong middle class and not such a big gap between rich and poor. It's getting bigger. This is what I'm afraid of. So it's not the right direction. But those two indexes are showing you the current state of mentality of young people in various countries. So that's important. Migration, Marcelo, if you allow me just one more minute. In 2015, when I was a president of the Slovenian Red Cross, and in 2015, we were facing the biggest migration wave in the recent history of, modern Europe. Yeah. In one day when I was at the border between Croatia and Slovenia, 16,000 migrants, refugees were passing the borders in one day. And it was devastating for me to see, you know, men and women with children. It's not something that I will ever forget. But at that time, we saw what European Union was not able to do at that time. I'm often, you know, very, very critical about European Union. I am a European. First of all, let's make this clear. I do believe in European Union. I do believe in this integration. And European Union was a peace project in 1953. That's the fact. But we are making mistakes. And the biggest mistake at that time was that we didn't find the courage and the energy to tackle and discuss the common migration politics inside the European Union. Only in 2021, we got a draft of the Migration and Asylum Act, which was enacted a year and a half ago. And the most important word in this act should be, it's not, it's mentioned only twice. It's solidarity. What did we do to Italy in 2015? The migration and refugee attack to Lampedusa and to Italy, and we were just watching, observing. It's not our problem. That was not fair. And now, inside this Migration and Asylum Act, we are discussing solidarity. If you're not going to take refugees, you will have to pay as a country. So let's say, fair enough. Hungary doesn't want to take refugees, they will pay. And then according to the, you know, the people that do live in a certain country, so by the number, we will have to take in percentage so many, and the number of refugees. So that's, let's say, fair. But what is unfair, and I see this as a huge potential danger, that the politicians, especially from the far right, and let's be honest, from the far left as well, you know, those two political spectrums are connected in the circle of politics at the end, yeah? Because they're really, really aggressive. Far right, a bit more on migration topic, yeah? And they are not clearly distinguishing the refugees from the migrants. Legally speaking, that's really very important. Migration is economical. Refugees have the right to seek asylum, wars, and so forth and so forth. And when we discuss refugees, my heart is with them every single day. They have the right to the asylum. It's the procedure, but they have the right. And the democratic countries should offer them asylum. But when we discuss migration, are we distinguishing enough illegal and legal migrations? And you see, here the danger lies for the right-wing parties. I am against illegal migration. Definitely, because this is not right. It's legally not right, and it's not fair to the countries who are invaded by illegal migration. Are we taking the right measures? Okay, that is a topic to discuss. And migration is a huge, huge topic in every single elections from 5 years ago, and it will be the next many years. So the politicians will have to tackle this. And Mediterranean will always be under the attack of migration, illegal or legal. And that's also the fact. And to conclude, I will just tell you about one thing. I do despise politicians who are spreading hatred for migrants and refugees, because there are different colors, because they have different sex orientation. That's not what we should do. No, and to use and abuse this for political purposes, that's something that I will always, always despise and fight against. You know my background, you probably read my CV, you know, I'm a human rights lawyer. And human rights are all about humanity. Liberalism, in a way. Human rights are liberal rights. But politicians are abusing human rights in a way that people are afraid of foreigners. And I will just tell you one data before passing the floor to my dear friend Marcelo. There is no single country on this planet which would be totally ethnically clean. Not a single one out of 206, which are the members of the International Olympic Committee, and 193 in United Nations. So this plurality is part of our lives since the beginning of humanity. So let's live with that. And let's take out of this the best we can. Cooperation, solidarity, humanity, dignity for everybody. That's what we have to strive for. Thank you.
Well, let us begin with climate change. let us be realistic. We cannot count on the United States. We cannot count on Russian Federation. We cannot count on China. We can count on Europe. Europe was a leader of this fight ever since it started in Tokyo, and then it was in Paris and so on. Each time there is a sign, a negative sign, coming from the superpowers, it means losing time on climate change. It happened in 2016 in the USA. It's happening now. So we can count on Europe, several other countries in several other continents. But even in Europe, we know that the fashion now is mostly egoistic in some countries, saying it's not a priority. It's no longer a priority. So we must keep on going and fighting. The COP in Brazil is very important. The presence of Europe in this COP is very important. Because it's a global problem. It's not just the problem of the Mediterranean. It's global. You can look at it. You cannot look at it as a regional problem. No, it's a global problem. And it is a problem and a fight where your role is a key role. Because older generations, they are, in sometimes many occasions, outdated. They have fought for it. They are giving it up. So it must be you leading this fight in Europe, in Northern Africa, in the East, in Middle East, in the rest of Africa. It's a difficult fight because you have also economic power fighting against it. And you have something new. In this new disorder, it's the alliance between great political powers and great economic powers. And this alliance is not good in several subjects, one of them, climate change. Economic powers, some of them want to produce more, mostly in countries where climate change is not a priority. What you can do, don't act alone, act together, organize yourself at every level, organize your fight, regional fight, continental fight, social fight, political fight, mediatic fight. It will be hard, but it must be done. Migrations. A part of it is connected with climate change. In Latin America and in Africa, it's visible that there are migrations caused by climate change, climate disasters that increase poverty and hunger and instability, social, political, economic instability. Of course, there are other reasons. Instability itself, war, very fragile systems everywhere. Even the so-called dictatorships, considered to be strong political systems, they are fragile everywhere. And there Europe also left and was not able to be accountable for its responsibility. I'll just give you an example. We Portuguese, we have, we integrate missions of UN for peace, keeping humanitarian situations and so on. We were asked to go inside by European leading countries that had influence in those areas. I'm speaking of Africa, for instance. They invited us as if someone invited you for dinner and then said, well, I'm not going to have dinner at home with you, I'm leaving, but be at ease and do have the dinner you want to. We were invited and they left. And it was necessary to ask people from other continents or from countries with no connection and no knowledge of Africa to come and help. This fragility, it's an ethical one, a moral one, it's a political one, it's egoism. And being egoistic means, of course, not thinking of the others. It's the opposite of solidarity. So, when Europe discovers, too late, there are migrations. They are coming. They are coming because there was no partnership between Europe and Africa. Because there was no cooperation about how to develop those areas where migration will come from. It will be obvious. There are no conditions, economic, social conditions. People will migrate. And then Europe discovers at the end, as I said, of this long process, that is shorter and shorter and shorter. Oh, they are coming. They are coming through Greece and Italy. They are coming. Then we must ask Turkey to make us a favor, well-paid favor, of really having some of them migrating or refugees, and then there is the whole difference. We Portuguese know it quite well because the Secretary General of the United Nations was for quite a long time High Commissioner for Refugees, and another Portuguese Director General for Migrations, replaced by an American, knowing very little about migrations in Asia, in Africa, and even in Latin America. So, the question is this. Either you try to solve the problem in the beginning of this process, or it will be impossible to solve it at the end of it. Then we'll be speaking of billions of people going from Central Africa to Sahel and from Sahel to Northern Africa, increasing instability in countries in all those regions. And this is going on. I must be faced. What can we do in Europe? Try to find a way of agreement. Some European countries don't want to receive. They're not able to receive. They don't have conditions. Others do have. So let us see how it's possible to balance the cooperation of different kind of states. But now, in this new disorder, for a while, the fashion is no migration. No migration, by principle. Let us have the radical point of view. Not a middle term, not a regulation of migration, not an agreement with countries where migration can come from concerning the destiny, the economic situation in those European countries, many of them southern European countries, and try to solve it with the political power and the social power and the economic power of the African countries. But at the moment, and this is the moment where the example that comes from the top, I mean from the so-called large and most important democracy, is you can, through a decision of the executive power, refuse migration and decide to expel thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, then the court says, no, you cannot do it. And the decision is, no, we are not going to respect the decision of the court. So that's when your fight is more important. That is the fight for humanitarian rights, for international law. It's not a radical fight even. So it's just a balanced fight against a stupid radicalization that is going on and will go on. Impossible. Because those will always be defeated. Because reality is more important than political decisions and so-called ideologies or fashions. Reality always wins. So either we prepare reality, deal with reality, try to establish partnerships to solve the problems. And the region around the Mediterranean is a very good region to do it. To do it, because it's a place where all those preconditions can be met or not, and dealt or not, beforehand. But unhappily, politics is becoming very emotional and very little rational. And it is very emotional and populist to call for egoism. I just give you an example. In Portugal, I was telling Natasha yesterday, we have 1 million migrants in 11 million population. Those that attack as a whole migration say it's dangerous because they're coming from these countries with instability. Or they correspond to religious communities that could be dangerous or against what is, in theory, the old pattern of living in Portugal. The truth is almost 700,000 migrants come from Brazil, Portuguese-speaking country, mostly middle classes. Middle classes, middle low classes, high middle classes. Easily stabilized. More than a half of the migrants come from this country. The second country is Ukraine, for political reasons, on account of the war. Mostly refugees than economic migrants. And so on, so on, so on. And you just give the examples and say the fiction you create about migration doesn't correspond to reality. Does it convince people? Not necessarily. At an emotional moment, the debate is emotional. No, they come, they are radical Muslims. They are now coming from Asia. Well, still small communities of Nepalese and Bangladeshi. They are dangerous. So, and I'm speaking of a good example, Portugal, where the problem is not a serious problem. So just imagine countries where it is a serious problem because there are cultural reasons, because there is history, because there are preconditions, both psychological and sociological, against it. Your role, be rational. Be rational. Be rational and deal with these problems. Firmly, but rationally. Build bridges between continents. Between all those and among all those countries around the Mediterranean. And others that are neighboring and that could have problems, same problems on climate change, on migrations. And go on increasing this action. During the dictatorship we had in Portugal before we had the revolution and democracy 50 years ago, the way we acted in different with different points of views, some more radical leftists, others more centrists or center-right democratic, which is my case, but other center-left democratic, was forming small groups, acting in small groups, and opening those groups, widening your action, using all the tools you can use, even against the wind. It's so good to make politics against the wind. It's not so easy, but it's what really is for our ideals and for our principles and values. It's what corresponds to something that is worthwhile doing it. Do it against the wind. The wind for a couple of years will be against it.
Marcelo, you will not be angry because I'm going to stop you because of the time. We are always over the time because we like talking stuff. We have to give more chances to the students to ask us questions. And sorry, Mr. President, I'm probably the only one who dared to stop you.
Thank you, Your Excellencies, for answering these questions. This would lead us to our last question, as we are a bit short on time. So I would like to invite our students.
Good morning, Your Excellencies. My name is Talha Ahmad from Palestine. Thank you for this opportunity to be here with us today. My question is, nowadays, it becomes ever clearer that Europe needs to catch up with the most technologically advanced countries. So in the field of higher education, how can Slovenia and Portugal strengthen collaboration with the universities in the South Mediterranean? Thank you.
You are so right that European Union, and not just European Union, Europe as a continent is lagging behind United States of America and China. US is still the strongest economy in the world. China is second. European Union, as a group of 27 member states, is on number three. I will tell you one number. There was one organization who is researching the digital development, innovations, connectivity to artificial intelligence in strategic investments in various countries. And they found out that the United States of America are number one on seven places, China on 43 chosen topics. European Union is neither first nor second on any of them. So that's a reality. And if you do have time, please read the Draghi report. That's a profound analysis of what are we doing wrong in European Union. And he's right to say 800 billion euros should be invested into the modern technologies, science, academia, and so forth, to catch up with China and US. And just follow the numbers of India. India is the fastest growing economy in the world currently. From 6 to 8% a year. We can only dream about those numbers. Slovenia is on 2.1, above the average of European Union, still a bit, yeah? So, what is necessary? No matter how hard it is to find a consensus among 27 member states, it is still possible, if you do have wise and smart leaders, to see the common vision and the common future. Together we are stronger. That's not just an empty sentence. That's the fact. And what Emuni is doing, Professor Bohinz, it's a great, great initiative and great project. You are going across the borders. You are collaborating with Lebanon, Egypt, Tunisia, Morocco, Algeria, and all the countries around the Mediterranean. So collaboration. Yesterday I said one beautiful sentence at the business forum, and I saw Marcelo nodding, and so I know that he agrees with that one. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. But ladies and gentlemen, most of all, I would like the world to start thinking about saving lives and not killing people. That's a woman speaking here, a mother. And what we are seeing around the globe currently is devastating. We have 55 armed conflicts, which is the highest number after the Second World War. We see United Nations as totally non-operative organization, but the only multilateral fora that we do have. So many things are at stake, and as Marcelo said, if you are destroying the current order, and if you are not offering a new one, you have a chaos. And we are in a bit of a chaos right now. The international law, excuse my French, went down the toilet, as the British would say. This is what I am afraid of. So yes, cooperation, that's what we have to and we need to do. This is the only way. And as I said to the business people, Slovenia is too small to compete on a national championship. We have to compete on European championships and at the Olympics. Cross-border, that's it. And the connectivity between business and social welfare is a strong one. If you do not have a successful businesses in the country, social state is not going to be on a high level. Healthcare, schools, whole education. So this is what it goes hand in hand. And I do believe in that. The synergies are there, and that the business should push us in politics to work harder. And if businesses are going to do well, the country is doing well. That's it. Of course, if you are a social welfare state, and if you do care about human rights, you will dedicate a lot of the money who comes from the private sector to the topics that they matter for the people and dignity of all people. So that's the synergy I want to have. Thank you.
Fully agree. Yes. That's it. I'm in. We are late, we must recover, otherwise we'll lose the timing, the right timing. And this institution is a very good example of what should be done. It's up to you that are privileged, so many other people would very much like to be in your place. Please make the most of your stay here and of your careers. It's up to you to decide.
Thank you, Your Excellencies, for your insightful words. I would like to express my deepest gratitude for your presence here today and for your time, wisdom, and commitment for shaping a better future for the Mediterranean. Your presence here today underscores the importance of academic and diplomatic collaboration in addressing global challenges. And at universities like EMONI, we are not only knowledge centers, but we are also serving as borders between nations, and we are shaping a better future for our Mediterranean. So I would like to thank you all for your presence today, and let's hope for the best for the Mediterranean and a more sustainable and prosperous future. Thank you all.